Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Christopher Scott, and I'm here with Bruno Promard.
Yes.
Yeah. How are you, mate? Excellent. You look French, you sound French, you seem to think you're half Chinese, is that right?
Yes, I'm half Chinese. I live for 8 years in China, and my wife is Chinese now, so I'm completely integrated, and I speak Chinese as well.
Okay. But were you born in France?
I'm born in France, yeah. Well, coming from the Loire Valley.
Yep.
And I used to be the winemaker of Beauvais-la-Dubay in Saumur.
Okay. And now, why did you move to China? Because was it your wife dragged you over?
Yeah. Actually, I moved for love reason.
That's why I'm here in
and
the
I'd,
UK.
And I just fall in love with a woman, with a country.
Yeah,
with the people who are so nice, and also because today it's a huge market and we're doing great business in terms of quality and in terms of selling.
Okay, so your winery is in China, but you're based in the Gobi Desert. Where is the Gobi Desert?
So the Gobi Desert is situated in a region called Inner Mongolia, which is not the Mongolia country. It's Inner Mongolia. It's a region of China, in the north of China. And it's a big region, which is quite three times the size of UK, really big.
Yeah.
And most of it is a desert, the famous desert of Gobi. And we are really on the south edge of this desert of Gobi, on the coast of a river called the Yellow River.
That's the big one that was dammed recently.
Yeah, a really big river. And we have the water coming from the Tibet, so we are lucky because the Yellow River just crossed the desert, so there is no pollution until our winery, and we can irrigate the vineyard with this water, actually.
So if you think of China as sort of an oval, you're in the west side.
We are in the center, straight in the center.
Oh, the center of China.
North.
Center north of China.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
And after that, quite an extreme terroir because it's very cold in winter. And 1 year out of 10, we can have a -20, -30 degrees. So we are obliged to bury the vineyard, which is a big job.
Yeah. Is that all done by hand or trucks?
Yeah, both.
Both.
And once those two problems are passed, the irrigation and bury the vineyard, this is really a fantastic terroir because there is no rain, so then there is no disease of the vine, no mildew, no idiom, no black rot. So I always make some beautiful grapes over there. It's really a pleasure to make wine over there.
So you get nice clean grapes from the lack of humidity, yeah?
Absolutely.
Oh, lovely. What sort of grapes are you growing?
So we have the classical Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot, but we have also have a grape called Cabernet Garnished, which is a grape which came from Europe before the phylloxera in 1870, something like that. And after, apparently, it disappeared in Europe in the phylloxera. So this is a Chinese grape. the real name is Xiaolongzhu, the Chinese name.
Yeah.
But in the 50s, a German enologist came to China and did a little bit of study about it and said that it was a sort of Cabernet, a mix of Cabernet, he said. So he called it Cabernet Gemischt, which means mix in German. But after it had a little bit of transformation, the M became RN.
Yeah.
And now the Occidental translation of the name of our grape is Cabernet Garnished. We have a beautiful German name for our Chinese grape.
Oh, lovely. Okay, and the three, I tasted some of your wines actually. You had a Semillon there and some Riesling as well.
Yes, we have a few white grapes, but actually it's just for the try because we doesn't sell a lot of white wine in China. But I'm doing some Semillon. I tried to make some sweet, but the last time I did it in 2009, grapes, the fermentation have been completed, so I did a dry late harvest, which is fantastic. And I have also some Riesling. So this year I've decided to mix the two. We have a Semillon Riesling, and I think we are the only one to mix Semillon Riesling in the world.
I don't know anybody who mixes Riesling.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. That, yeah.
The ruling normally is the Riesling is leave it alone, let it be by itself.
Sure.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. I tried the wine actually. I thought it was all right. It's quite strange because the nose is lovely aromatic nose that you'd expect a nice sweet wine. And I can see where you're trying to go with it. And then it's dry. So it's quite unusual, but probably, I don't know. I don't know much about, I like to cook Chinese. My wife would rather eat Indian for some reason.
Yeah.
So How does the food matching go? Do you look at food matching with the wines?
Yeah. So especially us, we are in Inner Mongolia, so there is a big culture of desert food, like the sheep, you know.
We
are just doing the food like in North Africa, actually. So our very strong wine really fits well to this sort of food. Actually, we do the sheep. We cook it like the Beijing duck. You know the famous Beijing duck?
Peking duck.
Peking duck. Sorry. And the skin is very dry and crispy.
Yeah, yeah.
So we make the sheep this way.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And we have a fantastic matching with our wine. But what we need, you know, the food in China are very spicy because of the Sichuan fashion to cook food spicy. And so then we need very strong wine to balance in terms of aroma, in terms of texture. And actually, it worked really well. And we are very happy of what happened every day at lunch and dinner.
So the owners of the winery are called, the wine is Hansen.
Actually, Hansen is a translation.
Oh, is it?
H-A-N-S-E-N is a translation in Occidental language. But first is a Chinese name called Hansen. Han means people of China.
Yeah, yeah, the Han dynasty.
Yeah, Han dynasty. And Sen means the forest. So it's a brand which means the forest of the people of China.
In the Gobi Desert.
This is a location.
Is there a forest nearby? Okay, so how big are Hansen? I think you quoted something like you produce 2 million bottles a year.
Today, yes. 4 years ago, we used to make 400,000 bottles, and we really had a 500% of increase in 3 years, because in 2011, something really happened in China was the people really stopped to make what we call the kanbei. The kanbei is the toast we do every day, every minute during a meal. They kanbei a lot in China. And they used to make the kanbei with the rice wine, you know, the rice spirit.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Now they stop. The fashion is to make it with red wine. Because they really believe red wine is better for health. So now their wife agree them to drink a lot. And actually they do a lot. You know, every 5 minutes there is a pretext to do a toast in China, and they never stop. There is a good consumption. They drink a lot, actually. And more in Inner Mongolia, because there is a Mongolian culture. So we say that when we drink one glass of wine in Beijing, we drink 10 in Inner Mongolia.
Oh, okay. I heard that the actual consumption of wine in China is still, yeah, relatively quite small for the per population compared to, say, France drinks gallons.
Yeah, I understand.
But there's so many Chinese, that's why the volume is...
I know the exact number, actually. In France, we drink 59 liters per habitant per year, and in China, 1.3.
Yeah, so...
But there is 1,400,000 people in China, so yeah. That makes the difference.
Yeah, yeah, so if it does become more and more of a fashion to consume wine as opposed to other beverages.
Yeah, but it's going up. So we don't know at the moment where it will stop, because more and more people are drinking red wine now. It's really a big fashion. So
yeah,
this is why it's such good times for us, because also we must say that 95% of the wine drunk in China is Chinese wine. Only 5% of imported wine.
Although there is a lot of imported wine that gets blended with Chinese wine.
But it's so ridiculous compared to the consumption of Chinese wine, I mean.
Yeah, okay. Let's get back to the Gobi Desert, because I'm quite interested in that. You said that there's plenty of water coming from Tibet. And is it coming down the Yellow River? Does the Yellow River start in Tibet, does it?
Yeah. Okay. The feet of the Tibet, yeah.
Okay. But I noticed you showed me a picture of your irrigation, and you... It almost looks like flood irrigation, or not quite flood irrigation, but you've got channels. So
yeah.
It's not the traditional drip irrigation you see in many countries.
Oh, yeah. We are obliged to build the canal ourselves to bring the water from the Yellow River to the vineyard. And after, we do some floated irrigation most of the time. Some. Yeah, floated, that means we open the gate, and the water is floated the vineyard during a few hours.
Yeah, yeah.
After we close the gates, you know, the former way of agriculture, and it worked well, actually.
Yeah. They use a lot of flood irrigation for rice production, don't they? Is that right?
Not in Inner Mongolia.
No.
A bit southern, yeah.
Yeah. But that's sort of technology. I suppose the nice thing about flood irrigation is if you've got loads of water, and it sounds like you've got loads of water, it's quite a cheap way of irrigating as opposed to maybe drip irrigation.
We pay the water.
You do?
Yes, of course. Yeah, yeah. You know, everything is controlled by the government, and we have to pay the water as well. It's not free.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So you still use, but that flood irrigation uses quite a lot of water. So it must still be cheaper to use the water than to pay.
Yes, of course. It's cheap. Yeah. But we pay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And in terms of you said you make a lot of red wines. I've tried your red wines, and they were good. They were a lot better than the most of the Chinese wines
I've had before.
I'm sure of that. I'm pleased I actually tried them, because I have been a bit disparaging of Chinese wines from my experience so far. And at least now I've tasted some pretty decent stuff. What do you think? You're obviously going down the Cabernet routes at the moment because it's hot. You've got climate. You can ripen them. Is there any other grape varieties that you think?
All the grape varieties have been tried in my region of Wuhai and Ningxia. But the best is the Cabernet Sauvignon, the famous Cabernet Garnish.
Yep.
Is growing well as well. And the Merlot.
Yep.
But we did some try of Pinot Noir, but the taste is really not Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
So it's really a big frustration to do wine with Pinot Noir, and not having the taste of Pinot Noir is making a special taste. Personally, I don't like it.
So how much the climate, I imagine, is too hot for Pinot Noir. You know, I always traditionally think of Pinot Noir as liking sort of coolish.
When we're going west, inland, in the region of Gansu and Xinjiang, the Pinot Noir is getting better over there.
As you hit west.
Because it's more west, because it's more cold, more continental.
I would have thought it got hotter with more
I know. More it is continental, more it is colder.
Oh, okay. That's
unusual. We arrive in Russia. Like.
It's really cold. Yeah. Okay. So
it's the same in France, actually. When you're going in Alsace, it's more cold.
When
you're going in Germany, it's very far from the sea. It's really cold.
I thought you got cold nights, hot days, the more continental.
Also, yes. The nights are cold. And because we are in the desert as well, the days are very hot.
Yeah. How hot do they get?
Oh, it's 35, 40.
35, 40, yeah. Which is not too bad for grape growing.
It's not too bad, yeah.
But vines do tend to shut down around 35 degrees,
don't
they?
It's okay.
Yeah, you don't. I tasted wine. There wasn't that many, like, sometimes you taste South African wines where it gets a bit too hot. They get a real green tinge to the wines where they just stop ripening. Your wines didn't really have that, so.
No.
So where is, because I would have thought you're almost too hot to grow.
No, it's not. We have when we have the ripeness of the sugar and the polyphenol of the tannin, is we can do the harvest. And what is interesting is the acidity didn't have the time to go down. So we keep a good freshness, actually. And this is good for the taste of the people over there, because it's really, really hot. It's like in, every hot country.
Yeah.
People like to have the freshness in the mouth when they drink wine.
Yeah.
So I have something like an average of 5 grams of acidity.
That's not too bad.
It's a little high, actually.
Yeah.
But also the wine are very rich, so there is a good compensation in the taste.
I heard you talk earlier about the wines, and you were saying that the grapes ripen very quickly, and you've just sort of said that about they ripen so quick the acidity doesn't get a chance to back off. Normally, when grapes ripen really, really quickly, you get alcohol ripeness. But you don't normally get flavor ripeness, but your grapes have got a reasonable flavor to them.
Yes, I would say so, yeah. So you're right.
Why is that? That's not normally what I would expect. I'd expect, fast ripening, high alcohol, maybe some greenish flavors.
Yeah, it's difficult to say, but what I would say is that China is another planet, and with new parameters, and it makes the thing different. And actually, I'm very happy to be there. My next 8 years for sure, until I will be 60 years old, I will stay over there.
Yeah. Okay then, Bruno, I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers. To you.
It's one day.